Blog Talk Radio.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I dream about the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, they tried to make me go to rehab. I won't go, go, go.
Everybody, that was Amy Winehouse, Rehab. Hope everybody's having a nice Friday. I am. This is Delicious Talk, your host, Gail Delicious Johnson. Tonight's show is Drug Addictions Among Celebrities. Okay, Another Junkie is Dead. Amy Winehouse has joined the Junkie Club at 27, where the admission is death. Other members who have joined the club at the tender age of 27 are Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, and Kurt Cobain. They all overdosed from their drug addiction. Are some celebrities exempt from rehab, jail, or face the consequences due to their addiction? Amy Winehouse thought she was. She even sang a song about it, which you guys just heard. Me and my co-host, Rhea, we will be discussing these and other celebs' addictions. We also will be discussing the fact that I battled with addiction myself, how I overcame it and have been drug-free for nearly 30 years. If you're out there suffering from an addiction or have suffered from an addiction, this show is for you. The call-in number is 646-652-2877. And with that being said, I'm going to bring in my co-host, Rhea. Rhea?
Hi, how are you? Do you get feedback from me? Because I got to put it on speaker.
Well, a little bit I was getting earlier when the song was on. I was hearing something like crunching or something. Were you eating some potato chips, darling?
No. Not this time.
I was hearing some crunching. I said, that girl over there eating potato chips.
You know what? That may have been me when I was switching earpieces and whatnot, but I don't know what that was. I'm not eating potato chips this time.
Okay. So how are you doing this hot Friday night? Hello?
I'm here. I said, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. You know, it was 104 degrees here today. I went out really quick and came back quicker than I went out because I can't deal with that heat.
I know this very well. This was finals week at the university for me, and it's like today was the first time I got a chance to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked all the final days, so it's like I had to start early, and I got home almost, let's say, 10:30-ish every night.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's like nothing else got done but that.
Wow. Wow. Like I said, I go out and get back in as quick as possible because even in the evenings, it's still hot. Early in the morning, it's hot, you know, so this is one horrible summer, you know, and I generally like the summer, but this is not a good one.
Yeah, we had two really severe days. And the other days, it was pretty decent in the morning, and then it would get really, really, really hot and stuffy. But once I'm inside the building, luckily there's a walkway that connects the building I work in with our main building. So
mm-hmm.
even if I want to go get something to eat or a snack or something like that, I don't have to go out the building. And so
right.
I don't go out time for me to go home. And this week hasn't been that bad. Last week was tough.
Mm-hmm.
I have central air, and my family was like, how are you making it over there? I said, that's okay. I go home, I take a shower, and I go to bed.
Wow. Well, I have central air, and I'm utilizing it, you know, because, like I said, I can't take that heat. I remember last summer my air conditioner, my central air was broke. Oh, my God, it was hell up in here for about a couple of weeks, and I refuse to go through that ever again in my life. I will go stay at somebody's house that has air, you know. But, okay, well, we're going to dive into this show. What do you think of Amy Winehouse's death? Because I had pulled up this article where it said Amy Winehouse's death makes us think about helping the addiction in our lives. The addict, I'm sorry, helping the addict in our lives. Now, I know, well, I knew, you know, quite a few addicts, and I really don't, you know, deal with those types of people anymore. But, you know, I don't think, why does it take her death to make people think about helping the addicts in your life? Do you understand what I'm saying? Because if you have an addict in your life, you're thinking about them. I don't think it really takes another person to make you think about them, you know, think about helping them.
I mean, there are some greater artists that went before her.
Right.
Spark that. Heck, that was what ultimately caused the death of Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Was his, yep. you know, his addiction to pain, whatever that was. And things.
Right.
I don't get that. Her death, I mean, I did, the day that I learned that she died, I'm like, that's another one that had a pretty powerful voice.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, I enjoy some of her music
mm-hmm.
Myself. And I just sit back and I look at, like, that statement. No, it didn't make me. I have a brother that's an addict. It didn't make me think about the addict. To you know, I mean, I've already thought about how trying to help him because he was my brother. And you can only get taken or get had so many times before you have to step back. Because ultimately, if they don't want to change, you can't make them change.
That's true. And that was the problem, I guess, that she was having because she was, I think she was in rehab at one point, I think. And I don't know what happened because I really don't keep up with, you know, that Dr. Drew rehab, things like that, because I've been there, done that. And I know what addictions can do to a person, you know, and the things you have to do to get away from that addiction. It's not, you know, it's not easy, believe me. It's not easy, but if you honestly and truthfully have it in your heart to get away from it, you know, you call on that one person to help you, and that's God. Because I don't care how many rehabs you go into, I don't care how many meetings you go to, I don't care who you talk to, it's not until it's in your heart that you actually want to get rid of that addiction. And you have to work with your prayers when you're praying for help with that addiction. So, you know, obviously she really wasn't ready to you know, give up her addiction because I really didn't know that much about Amy Winehouse until, you know, hearing that she was dead. And someone had sent me a clipping of the last concert that she did. I'm telling you, now this is where it gets really sad. I'm quite sure the people that was in her circle knew that, you know, she was an addict. Talking about her manager, her publishers, and, you know, people like that, they had to have known that this girl was on the brink of total destruction because that concert was, it was just sickening to watch. She looked like she didn't even know where she was at, you know. And, you know, I realized that probably when they had booked her or whatever, they just banking on the fact, well, she may be okay, or, you know, the people are not going to say anything. They're just going to accept her because she's a household name brand or whatever, you know. But the people in her circle should have stood up for her or, you know, just told her, showed her some tough love. You're not going to go on stage like that, you know, or hit her in the pocket or something like that because they are enablers.
Exactly.
You know, those are the enablers. They, you know, don't care what she do as long as they get paid behind it. You know, and a lot of those celebrities out there in Hollywood or wherever they're at doing these drugs, they basically are meal tickets for people, and that's why they continuously let them to do what they do.
Which is that's something that I really never understood. Why, I mean, you have all these people around you. They're supposed to be some type of support system. Even when it comes to, I put it like this. I can understand that it's hard fighting an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had an addiction to drugs. But I can honestly now say that I had an addiction to the male in my life. Because for me, the things that I endured at his hands and at his actions and deeds, it had to be some kind of addiction because I was crazy as all hell, but not even here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
People around her, the ones that are supposed to be her support system, I understand what you said because you just covered it. She was a meal ticket to them. If they had hit her in her pocket, we cannot book you. You cannot perform this, that, and the other. Because the one thing this woman did like doing or loved doing was performing.
Mm-hmm.
If they had make she may still be alive. She may have started trying to make that transition to see, I can't have them both. Either I got to do this one or I can do this one. Which one do I love greater? She may have tried to weigh it or something. But, no, I can't. They didn't. There's no way they could have done that. Because since she's been in the news, she's been out of it. I mean, before that, the guy she was with went to jail. They had all kind of her half-dressed, drugged out, sitting on curves on streets in her underwear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what year? That was what, 3-4 years ago. So I don't know. I do understand, and I do also understand that they surround themselves with yes people.
Yeah, yeah, that is the truth. I'm going to read what she sang about the rehab song because when I got the lyrics and was reading, I said this was basically almost like like her confessing to why she's on the drugs. Let me just read this. Okay, they tried to make me go to rehab, but I said no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, you know I ain't got the time. And if my daddy thinks I'm fine, he's tried to make me go to rehab, but I won't go. I'd rather be at home with Ray. I ain't got 17 days, because there's nothing you can teach me that I can't learn from Miss Hathaway. I didn't get a lot in class, but I know we don't come in a shot glass. The man said, why do you think you're here? I said, I got no idea. I'm going to lose my baby, so I always keep a bottle near. He said, I just think you're depressed. This me, yeah, baby, and the rest. I don't ever want to drink again. I just need a friend. I'm not going to spend 10 weeks, have everyone think I'm on the mend. It's not just my pride. It's just till these tears have dried. So I don't know, you know, how long she was on the drugs or anything like that, but there definitely was a problem while she was on them. Because, you know, just reading these lyrics, you know, she said that her baby's going to leave her, and she always keep a bottle by her side. But when she was on stage, that was not drunk. That was not from alcohol. That was either heroin or could have been meth, but that definitely wasn't alcohol. You know, so it's sad that it had to come to that. But, you know, like she said, she didn't want rehab. And not to say that, you know, rehab would have helped her, because she really wasn't even ready for rehab. When people go into rehab and all these things because their mother's pressing them, their children's pressing them, everybody's pressing them to do that, when they go in there, they're only doing it because to get the nagging off their back, because you would have to do it for yourself. You know, you can't let somebody tell you to go into rehab because they want you to be better. You have to want to be better for yourself. You know, so if you go in there because mama was crying her eyeballs out, you know, have you ever seen the program that comes on, Intervention?
I saw that one time when I was actually out there in Maryland with my sister, and I didn't even finish watching it. I couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to tell you, the saddest one that I have ever saw on there was this guy. He was an alcoholic. And he had these businesses, and all his business was failing because he was drinking so bad. He was coming to work late. He wasn't keeping his records. You know, everything was just going down the pot. So he went to rehab. Fighting nail and tooth. When he got out, he started back to drinking, and he died. That was the saddest one. And he was a young man. So, you know, the other interventions, they go and they either come out, they be clean for, you know, whatever length of time, or they come out and they're clean, period. Or they come out and be clean for a minute and then go back. But like I said, that was the saddest one that I have ever seen of intervention. And, you know, I think he had a bad liver, and, you know, he just literally drank himself to death.
Wow.
You know, so people, you know, even though, you know, I know my mother didn't want to see me you know, being on drugs. I know that, but in my mind, from the drugs, it was like they had taken over. You know, because people, they could tell you they love you, they this, they that, but it's your mind that's going through the drug trance, the drug. It's your mind that's all screwed up with the drugs. So I'm going to also have a list of, this is some celebrities that who had addictions to either street drugs or prescription drugs. David Ruffin, Natalie Cole, Marvin Gaye, Charlie Sheen, Phoenix River, Anna Nicole, her son Danny, Whitney Houston, Bobby Brown, Martin Lawrence, Gerald LaVert, Soulja Boy, Bob Marley, Britney Spears, Billie Holiday, Judy Garland, Frankie, Keisha Cole's mom, Michael Jackson, Ted Williams, Richard Pryor. You know, that's only a tip of the iceberg of the addicts, you know, who are still addicts or who have been addicts via street drugs or prescription drugs, because that's what Gerald LaVert had died from. I think it what's that drug everybody's, OxyContin.
Really?
OxyContin and some other kind of depressant. He was on antidepressant. But, that's what they said. It was a mixture of OxyContin and some other type of antidepressant pill.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Natalie Cole got hepatitis.
Yeah.
From using shooting drugs.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
so.
She actually hung out sometimes in a neighborhood that we grew up in. The guy she married lived around the corner mm-hmm. from, and we went to Marvin Yancey, the preacher, and
right.
school with his younger family members. And some of my family actually had an opportunity to see her. And my sister saw her once, and she talked about how high she was. She, you know, so we kind of knew that. But see, we grew up on 47, right off 47 in Calumet, which was like a block over, basically, was Dauphine Central.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had the unfortunate opportunity of actually seeing, you know, what being a drug, people who actually shoot it. What
right.
things such as that.
Right. And so now she's reaping the repercussions of her drug addiction, you know. And Marvin Gaye, he was addicted to, but I don't really think Marvin Gaye shot coke, but he snorted it. And he just was so out there on it, just, you know, just gone. And
alcohol too, didn't he?
Huh?
He did alcohol too, didn't he?
I think he did do alcohol as well as snorting cocaine. He went to Europe, and Smokey Robinson went over there to see him, and he said he was living in squalor, you know, just, he was just so torn up seeing him like that, you know. But the addiction really takes you for a ride. And, you know, some people think that it's an easy thing to get off of. And there's a certain, you know, we had talked about a certain judge on TV always, you know, coming down on drug addicts and junkies, you know, kind of hard. But, you know, sometimes you have to do that. But, you know, he's always saying that if you don't go to rehab, you can't be rehabilitated, and you need the meetings and things like that. Now, my thing with the meetings, I really didn't like going into the meetings, because the simple fact, if you're supposed to be getting getting your system cleaned out. And, you know, this is my personal thing about meetings. Now, I'm not knocking anybody who goes to meetings. If you go to a meeting and that helps you, then, you know, I'm happy for you. But to me, I didn't like going in there because they smoked cigarettes. That's nicotine. And, you know, it was just, and then they just, the atmosphere was like, you know, everybody's talking about what they did when they was on drugs. And to me, that was just basically like intensifying what I wanted to do, because I would go to a meeting and have my drugs with me, couldn't wait to get out of them to, you know, go and do my drugs. So for me, the meetings didn't work. Then I was in rehab, and the only reason why I went in rehab was because I was trying to beat a charge that I had gotten, because I used to sell drugs, and I was my best customer. So, you know, not unless you want to do it for yourself, it's not going to work. And I went into rehab, and I didn't even know that I was so bad off. I was in there for like, well, I stayed in there, I think, 30 days. And when I went through orientation, the nurse had told me within the third day or something like that, she told me when I came in that she said I was incoherent. And I didn't even know that I was incoherent, because I thought maybe I was talking right, but she said I was incoherent and I was really jittery and this and that. But because of the drugs, you don't see yourself the way people see you.
Okay.
You know, so I'm thinking that everything what she told me, what had happened. And do you know, when I first went in there, all I wanted to do was to get high one more time. When I had visits, I would beg them, please, please bring me a rock. Please, this be my last time. Because, see, I really didn't have it in my mind to get, you know, to stop using the drugs. The only reason why I was in it, like I said, was to try to beat a charge. But when I got out, and when you're in there, you feel so safe, so secure, so serene, because you're not, you know, in the environment or you're not around those people. But once you get out of there, you know, because I was a little afraid, too, because after I had gotten clean, you know, my thinking and everything was on point. You know, I'm still thinking, wow, what am I going to do when I get out of here? I hope I don't see so-and-so, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But when I got out of there, I went right back around the people, the places, and the things. And see, that's your failure right there, because I'm thinking, I can do this. I know I can be around them, and I ain't even going to want to get high. But see, that was, I was in denial, and I was lying to myself. So when I got out, I went, you know, right back to doing the same thing that I was doing before I had, you know, went to jail. Subtract, I wasn't selling anymore. But, you know, I still was, you know, getting high with the same people. And what had really was my rock bottom, because some people, believe it or not, don't even have a bottom. And that's what makes them keep doing it until either they end up dead or in jail. But my rock bottom was the fact when I did go to jail for the crimes that I had committed, which was selling drugs. And when I got out, I was clean for a minute, and then I just moved away from where I was living at. But where I had moved to, it was like I went from the frying pan into the fire.
Wow.
So I stopped going to see my probation officer. And one day he had saw me on the street, and I was in shock. I said, oh, no. So he told me to come to his office. That was on a Friday when I saw him. So that Monday I went to his office. And, you know, he was asking me, where had I been? And I'm sitting up there just lying, saying, you know, I don't even remember what I had said to him, but, you know I was lying to him. So then when I was getting ready to leave, he tells me that he needs a urine sample. And I knew that I was dirty. And this is how crazy the addiction had me. I had a rock in my bra when I went to see him. So I goes in the bathroom and try to Well, I was so, because when you go in the bathroom, you have somebody standing right there with the door open watching you. So I don't know if it was because she was watching me or whatever it was, but I couldn't urinate. So I left. I just left. And, oh, my goodness, I got a letter in the mail. He had violated my probation and told me I was going to have to serve the back of time, and I had to go to court. So I went to court. That was my bottom, because I said, when I got out of jail, I said, this is one place I would never, ever, ever come back to, because it is no joke. So I got the letter in August. My court date wasn't until September or October, something like that. So I said to myself, I just prayed, I asked God, I told him, I talked to him like I'm talking to you, and I told him to please take this addiction from me, because I did not want to lose the things that I had acquired since I got out of jail, which I had gotten a job working in a hospital, and, you know, because when I got out, I went to school, took a technical course to be a certified phlebotomist technician, and did my clinicals in the hospital that I was working in. Do you know, some mornings I would go to work, I would be so high until my work would be done so fast until I couldn't believe that I had did it that fast when I was high. But when I wasn't high, it was like, you know, it'd take me a little longer to do it. But it was just some days I would think, you know, thinking back on it after I had really got my sobriety, and I think back of all the things that I had did when I was, you know, in my addiction, and I said to myself, I am so blessed to still be alive, because I had OD'd three times. I used to shoot heroin. I OD'd three times. The third time that I had OD'd, I got to the hospital DOA. I didn't even know what was going on the next day when I came to, but when I opened my eyes, I didn't know where I was at. All these tubes were in me, and I couldn't, you know, my thinking couldn't come. I just didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what had happened from the time that I had OD'd to the time when I had was in the hospital, and I was in the hospital for like 5 days. But, you know, and then I had been robbed. A guy put a gun to my head. Another guy that was staying with me, he was crazy. I didn't even know that he was shooting heroin. I mean, not heroin, shooting coke. And he was so paranoid. It makes you paranoid. I used to smoke coke, but it would make you so paranoid until it's not funny. And he had these guns. And one night he just went off, and he just got the shooting all up in my apartment. I mean, it was like, I believe if my son wasn't there, my son was maybe about 11 or 12, something like that.
Okay.
And he somehow wrestled the guy down to the floor. And the police came and took him out of there. And do you know that guy was so paranoid until he thought, because he had called a friend of mine and told a friend of mine to bring him over to my house because he wanted to kill me. This guy was a hitman. He wanted to kill me because I had turned him into the police. And I said, what is he talking about? But luckily, you know, the guy that he had called was a friend of mine. And he said, I can't do that. I can't take you over to that girl's house. She can kill her. She ain't do nothing to you. But he actually believed that I had called the police on him. But it wasn't me. The neighbors had called the police because they heard all that shooting. So they called the police. But he died. And this guy, last I heard, he had OD'd. This was some years ago. But, you know, just going through all the things that I went through, I almost lost my apartment because I didn't pay the rent for a couple of months. And my brothers, they got together and they paid the rent. And, I mean, you know, just doing all kind of things that, because your mind is so not there, you know, you have these drugs in you that do mind-altering things to you. And I've used mostly every drug out there except for ecstasy and methamphetamine. That's the natural, mescaline, reefer, purple haze, PCP, you know, just did it all, you
wow.
know. So I can, you know, honestly say that I know what an addict goes through. You know, some addicts, because some addicts go through worse things or, you know, whatever they go through. But just speaking from my experience, and I know if a person can, and I know the worst, they say the worst drug out there is methamphetamine. I've never done meth, and I've never done ecstasy. So I don't know, I can't speak on meth, but I've seen, you know, different programs where they show a person on meth is just, ooh, that is just horrible. You know, they had this program on where these two couples, this couple, they had gotten high off of meth and they was riding somewhere in a snowstorm. Then all of a sudden they started hallucinating. To make a long story short, they both ended up dead because they didn't know where they was at. The girl had gotten out of the car because they said that people was following them and Indians, and, you know, they just was hallucinating so bad they thought that they could walk to wherever they were going. And they ended up, you know, freezing to death.
Oh.
Yeah. But those drugs, they will put things in your mind. And remember when Richard Pryor said that the pipe was talking to him?
Yeah.
That's the truth, because the pipe talked to me. I am serious. It talked to me because I used to, and the crazy thing about it is when my kids, you know, I'd be getting them ready for school, and I could hear that pipe saying, hurry up and get them out of here. Hurry up so you can smoke me. You know, just, and I know it sounds crazy, but actually you can hear those things in your mind. You know, so I just, you know, the only thing I can do is pray for people who have addictions, and a lot of the people that I used to get high with are either dead or in jail. And this one guy that I used to get high with, he is still to this day. I mean, I saw, the last time I saw him has been, I really can't remember the last time I saw him, but both his parents had died and left him a house. The house was paid for. All he had to pay was the taxes on it. So I had moved out of that area, but one day I had went back around there to see, you know, how he was doing, because I had talked with him a few times over the phone, and he said, you know, everything was good and all this and that. So I was in the neighborhood. So I said, I'm just going to, you know, drop by and see how he's doing. I went up to the house, and I noticed some new things. It had a bay window put on. So I said, wow, well, he's really doing good. Then somebody was out front in the house next to that house, and they said, he don't live there no more. I said, what? I could not believe it. So a friend of mine had, I told him if he saw him to give him my number, you know, so I could talk to him. When he called me, I said, what happened to the house? He said, you know what happened to the house. So I said, I don't know what happened to the house. He said, you know I'm still doing that S. I said, no, you're not. I said, what? Why? You know, I just, you know, I mean, I can understand. And then when you get older, you're supposed to get a little wiser, too. So he's not quite as old as me, but he's maybe about a year or two younger than me. But still, I mean, why? And if my parents left me a house that all I had to do was pay the taxes on it, do you think I would lose the house? I would beg, borrow, and steal to keep that house. But he's still doing drugs. So I haven't seen him in years, so I don't know, you know, what he's doing or, you know, what condition he's in. But, you know, I'm hearing that he's looking really, really bad, real bad. And I don't know. It's just sad when people go like that, you know. Just like Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown, when they had that TV program. Both of them, I know both of them were high. Did you ever see any of those programs that they did when they had that show?
Of it. I never said I saw a whole one, but I did see parts of it. And you could clearly see that they were high.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're trying to say that that Whitney had turned Bobby Brown on. But who knows who turned who on, but whoever turned who on should have turned them off. Because I heard Whitney was then gone into rehab. Because
after she released that album.
Oh, I don't know, but when she did a concert over in overseas, it was like, oh, my God. It was another disaster. So I don't know what she's doing.
She sounded horrible.
Yes. Yeah, so drugs, you know, and the celebrities that, you know, have all these big parties and bring out the big coke and the heroin and all this other kind of stuff. Next thing you know, you're hearing about them being dead.
Yeah, I know. I know Patti LaBelle had, in the interview, she talked about that. She talked about her first introduction to what she called the party scene. And then she started saying, they just don't understand. My party is on the stage. When I come down on stage, my party is over with, and I go head home. She said, because she doesn't like going to, the, you know, like the parties and stuff like that anymore. She went to one party, and she said, just like you have a hors d'oeuvre table, they had a drug table.
Right.
And everything in the world was on that table. And they didn't understand her not doing what they were doing because she didn't do that.
Right.
And she was interested in doing that. And they, you know, I guess questioned her being there or whatever. And so she stopped coming to them even when they tried. She said, no, I do my partying on the stage. And when I come off the stage, I'm going home.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have people that are, you know, don't want to be in the drug scene. Then you have people who are pressured into it or just, you know, try it that one time. And the next thing you know, they're hooked.
Exactly.
I have someone with their hand up. Let's bring this caller in.
Okay.
Hello, 919, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. And yourself? You have a question or a comment?
I got a comment.
Oh, okay.
I've never personally been, you know, I've never personally been involved in the music business, but I've definitely been a very skeptical observer from the sidelines, and you know, I think that's a safer position.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that, yes, there are definitely a lot of celebrities that their drug addictions are being made public because, you know, I know a lot of people that are not celebrities just in my neighborhood and, well, in the old neighborhoods I used to live in that were drug addicted too.
Right.
And it seems to me that I was listening to another woman speak. She was an older woman. She was talking about, she was familiar with the music industry, and she says that first things first, if you want to enter into the music business, you have to make sure that you master all lower desires, and one of the lower desires is drugs. They talk about it all the time in their music: sex, money, and drugs. And if you don't know how to, if you can't handle sex, if you can't handle money, and if you can't kick a drug addiction that you had before you went in, or if you're not strong enough to discipline yourself to refrain from it, you get sucked in and you get devoured. And a lot of musicians start off young, old, middle-aged, whatever, you know, have never been in drug situations, and as soon as they get into the music business, boom, they get thrown into some new stuff. And they want to experiment. Now, you know, if you want to drink a little here and there, whatever, but if you don't know how to discipline yourself to where you keep the party on stage and go home, or you don't know how to say no, you have a weakness for women, you have a weakness for men, it seems like whoever's in charge of you, the manager, I call the handler, it seems like they find out what your weakness is in the music industry, and they make you and they surround you by it to see if you're going to fall, which is why it's important to burn all that shit, that stuff out, you know, before people jump into the music industry. And then you see celebrities doing the same thing we do, but they're in the public eye, you know, which requires a whole lot more discipline, because, you know, you got a lot of people that look up to these people and they're influenced by it. We ain't got to do what they do, but, you know, your favorite musician, you know, influenced
right.
you in whatever positive or negative way. So yeah.
Right, and that's the downfall of a lot of people when they try to emulate somebody that they admire, you know, because they smoke reefer. I was at a concert back in, I think it was the late 70s, when Bob Marley, and he was at Constitution Hall here in Washington, D.C. He pulled out the biggest spliff, they call them spliffs, and was smoking on stage and passing it around to, you know, whoever could get it in the front row. And that was really something amazing to see at a concert. You know, you can't do that now, but he sure did it at that concert. And I'm quite sure a lot of people were influenced by that and, you know, may have started smoking reefer behind it.
It seems like when he first came out, beautiful music. I've heard most of his music. I wasn't born then, but instead of the music industry wanting you to focus on the love in his music and the unity, they want you to focus on, you know, always seeing his face and his picture with a blunt or a joint in his mouth. A spliff. You know what I'm saying? It's just when they did, they want you to believe what they want you to believe when he was living. You know, I don't think he realized what he started. I think he had a mature audience, but then he had the immature too, you know. And I don't think a lot of musicians and celebrities realize how much power they really have until they wake up one day and, like, and they see 50 people looking like them, dressing like them, talking like them. They're like, wow, this is for real.
Right.
It's for real. This is not a game. You know,
that's the truth.
Y'all see it. You see it because you're a lot older and more experienced. You know what I'm saying? But the younger generation, they're being born with a mind of their own, which is a good thing. They're coming out grown with a whole lot of mouth and sass, but at the same time, that's a good thing because I don't want them to be born open to all types of BS, because you can see the BS going on. So I don't know how you guys were in the 70s. I was born in 84.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, in the 70s, it was all about hippies, yippies, and, you know, everybody was basically smoking reefer. And, you know, just everything was cool, so to speak, back then, you know. But as time went on and, you know, the drugs became... people became more into different types of drugs because, like I said, I've used every drug except for ecstasy and methamphetamine. But, you know, back then, the drugs were what they what they supposed to have been, because now they're mixing everything into these drugs, and you know, because that's another reason why I would never ever go back to using drugs. And you know, a person say never, but I could say never because number one, I believe if I should go back, I would die, and number two, the drugs are not like they used to be. So we have another caller. We'll bring this caller in. I think I know who this is. My switchboard is acting crazy, caller. Just hold on. Okay, 334, are you there?
Hey, baby, this is Grandma.
Hey, Grandma, what's up?
Oh, God, I tickled me. Wait, really? Grandma be having to come give y'all show some spice, honey. Y'all be sitting up here like two old bitches at night on the porch just reminiscing down memory lane. Yeah, ma'am. You know, I just had to say something crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I agree with that caller, though, somewhat. I'm a send this baby, but I agree with the caller, whatever. I'm waiting on Lil Wayne to croak in a minute. I ain't lying.
Girl.
He's going to be the next one to bite the dust because all that sipping, surfing crap, it's gonna wear and tear on that system before it's all over with. And if he don't die now, it's going to catch up with him when he hit them 40s.
Yep.
I don't know. Some people can do drugs and be blessed, you know what I'm saying, to just get away with that. I, too, used to smoke weed, yes. I loved it. I swear to God I did. But then I used to sit up and think, like, why am I really doing this? Because sometimes, you know, you got different types of weed. And I'm just going to put my two cents in here real quick about my experience with the drug usage. Okay. Some weed used to make me feel like I was on cloud 100. Then there was other weed that make me feel like I'm just depressed as hell. You know what I'm saying? Some weed that I done had that gave me like a mixed emotion type feeling. I don't know how I feel. I'm just him. I'm chilling. You see what I'm saying? I had gotten a hold to some weed one time that had some embalming fluid on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you how I found out that it had embalming fluid on it. I called my aunt because when I went to the bathroom and I peed, my pee looked brown. So I was like, oh, God, something is wrong with me. I think I'm dying. So, you know, I'm dramatic, honey. I'm over the top about everything. I called my aunt, and I told her what had happened. Now, she's a professional weed smoker, too. She was like, oh, girl, calm down. It's just that your pee real yellow, and whoever you got that weed from, they probably tried to put some, not really probably tried, but they put some embalming fluid on it, thinking that it was going to give it, like, more potency or something. I'm like, really? Embalming fluid, nigga, that's what they put in dead people. I don't think I need to be just inhaling this stuff because I ain't trying to die.
That weed with the embalming fluid, I was an idiot and I did try it, and it really gives, it's a really bad trip. I just prefer the old regular natural reefer because when I hit a small piece of joint with that was dipped in that stuff or whatever, however they make it. It has a different chemical smell. Also, after I hit it, I tried to go lay down, and I thought my bed was a grave.
Wow!
I sat up in a chair. I never hallucinate on it. I've always been one to hold my, you know, to hold my smoke or my drink down when I was doing it like that younger. But that night, that's the first bad trip I ever had. I thought my bed was my grave. I sat up and slept in a chair the whole night.
I was in California where this is called liquid. It's called water. And they did these little cigarettes called sherbet sticks in them, and they call it sherm. And when you get the drugs out west, they're more pure. By the time they get to the East Coast, they've been cut up and all this kind of stuff. So I was in California, and it was maybe about 10 of us sitting out front one day. And we had like a sherm stick, which was probably a half of a cigarette. Passed it around to everybody a couple of times. Do you know I got so high until I it was just when we, me and the guy, when we was driving back to his place, I was so scared because he was telling me how he lived in Pomona, California, which is close to the border, and he was telling me how the Mexicans were up there, and I was scared to death. And plus, he was like, this guy was a trip. But anyway, getting back to when we was all sitting out front, we're all sitting out front, so then all of a sudden, everybody got up and went into the house, and me and this guy, we're still sitting out front. So I turned around and looked, and they was peeping at us out the window, you know, and I said, what in the heck is going on? But yeah, it'll trip you out. You begin to hallucinate and have all kind of thoughts, and then some people get super strength from it, because if you hear about somebody being on a PCP trip and the police trying to subdue them or apprehend them, they have a really hard time because they fight them. And yeah, so I know about the water. PCP. I sure do. I was a guy, we used to have like sets in different people's houses. We go and smoke and get high. And this guy one time, he was at my house, and I lived on a third floor, and these were steep flights of third floor. He went out on the balcony, and first he threw his money over there. So when he was trying, he climbed up on the railing like he was going to jump off. I kept trying to hold his arm, but I was laughing so hard. And my cousin, my nephew had came out. He had to pull that guy back over that railing, because if he had fell over there, he would have definitely died. So my nephew went around and got his money from, you know, around there. I don't know what made him throw his money over there, but he threw his money over the balcony. It was a trip that night. But, and they give you milk to bring you down off of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it'll have you hallucinating and, you know, going through all kind of changes. You know, because different drugs do different things to your mind. But one thing for certain, two things are for sure, your mind be altered anytime you take drugs to it. Even some prescription drugs alter your mind, and the side effects are not good. So,
well, see, I wonder why the celebrities, like the rappers, not just the rappers, all of them. I ain't gonna single out rappers, but they the main ones. They're in the industry. They see what the alcohol and weed do to the musicians, and they still promote it. It's like, how many times can you rap about the same type of Nouveau or the same type of Hennessy? Okay, we know Hennessy, you know, it'll get you drunk. Okay,
right.
move on to the next, please. It's like you got 50 songs about the same drink, and behind the scenes, they best buddy is an alcoholic going to AA meetings, and they go make another song about it. You know, it's,
well, this, let me tell you another something that's crazy. When a drug addict overdoses, you know what the next drug addict asks them?
What?
Where did you get that dope from? They're not really concerned about you ODing or you're laying somewhere, you know, and they're trying to revive you. All they want to know is, where did you get that dope from? And they used to have names like Homicide, Murder One, Killer. You know, these are the names of different herons that plagued the cities back in the 70s. And I've been in shooting galleries where, you know, and see people OD and just go out, and people just continue what they're doing. They may, you know, try to bring them to, but if they can't bring them to, they'll leave them there and just go on doing what they're doing, you know. So drugs, they're powerful if you give them that power over you.
Right. I agree with what you said earlier. You were saying that even if you were to start back, you wouldn't even do it now. They put so much stuff in the dope. They put so much stuff in the weed. And you're right, because I read on the Yahoo News a week or two ago, and they said that they had people over there with the tip of their nose turning black and the tip of their ears turning
black. Right, from them putting the cut that they're putting on the drugs now. They're cutting
it
with something that's giving them the flesh-eating disease, flesh eating, is causing them, their flesh to be ate up, and it's also being detrimental. It's also being fatal to some users.
I think they said it was some type of horse heart. It was some type of horse heartworm stuff they put in it. I said, but that ain't what it's supposed to do. Even if you put some heartworm medication in it, is it?
Well, I really don't know the ramifications of, you know, what they're cutting it with and what it will do to you, because just like they use tranquilizers and different things like that in these drugs, because I think in Angel Dust they use some type of animal tranquilizer along with embalming fluid, and, you know, the effects that it have on humans, it's going to naturally be different than what it is on animals. So I really don't know, you know, I don't even know what they're cutting it with, but I did read an article similar to that where it was, you know, causing the flesh to be ate up.
That's crazy.
From whatever they're cutting it with. Yeah. And I remember when I used to, sometimes I would go out and, you know, try to buy a crack, and this guy actually sold me a rock, a real rock. I can say I have been through the mill with those drugs, but, you know, still would, you know, do whatever, you know, to go out and get them. And like when I said, when I was selling, I was my best customer. And that's not good to be a dealer and you your best customer, you know, so it really will take you for a ride. It really will. And when you lose your life over it, that's the end. That's it. So when I eventually, like I said, what had eventually brought me to the realization that I didn't, you know, I didn't need these drugs. These drugs were destroying my life, was the fact when my PO wanted me to go back and serve my backup time in jail. And see, I can't do jail. I can't, and I never will. So that was my bottom.
Right. Right. I'm glad you got delivered from that, sister. I really am, because I don't know if I've been that deep into it. I tried cocaine and drinking and cigarettes, you know, kind of like, the, you know, that's bad too. And I think the new addictions are coming from the soldiers, because a lot of them are coming home so stressed out and so whatever that they're, you know, they're the new drug addicts of today.
Right.
And
right.
I was in the military as well, so that contributed a lot to the addiction that I had. And I started off so young. I guess you do start young, because it starts off with something being cool and then it spirals out of control. But a lot of people, you know, you got functional drug addicts. I know a lot of people.
Right.
I know a lot of, well, not a lot, but I know about 5 people that smoke crack and they go to work and they smoke on the weekend.
Right. That's what I was doing. I was a functional junkie. I would get up and go to work every day. And, you know, couldn't wait to get home, you know, to indulge in my addiction. You know, you do have function junkies. So we're going to take a little quick break, and I'm going to play something by Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. Those are the two that had succumbed to their addiction as well. So when I play this, we'll be right back. Thank you.
You're gonna rise.
Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. You know, I could basically see her singing that. I really did like Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix because back in the day, we would, you know, play their music and, you know, get high and just have a good time. Let's bring this caller back in. I can hear somebody's television in the background. Can you please turn it down?
I apologize. That was me. Sorry.
Okay. I'll call it 334. Are you there?
Here's me. Grab my head to go change her depends.
What you doing over there, Grandma?
Girl, looking at some crap on Billy, too. Me and that boy club. You know, I love that gangster stuff. Yeah, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Surfing the internet, grandma trying to find her grandpa.
I know that's right. Well, don't you mess with nobody out there smoking no pipes. Especially them glass pipes.
Me don't do no crackheads, honey. Mm-mm. Can't do it. That's one of the reasons why I felt like I needed to stop trying to smoke weed. All this crap they putting into it. Come on. We got that Kush, that Bin Laden. It's kryptonite. Oh, that sound like that's going to kill me. I don't need that.
Yeah, all those crazy names, because back in the day we had Mexican Red, Ganji, what's the other, Sesamillion. And, I mean, these were top grain smokes. I mean, the good smoke. And like I said, I really don't think that, because, even the quality of it is not, you know, like when we used to get it back in the day. If you bought a nickel bag, you get so many joints out of it. Nowadays, I understand you get two or three.
Out of what?
Out of a nickel bag.
Girl, stop. You
That's
lucky
what
if
I heard
you
now.
Roll,
I don't know.
You lucky if you even roll a joint up out of nickel bag. See, I used to sell it. I was smoking it, and I was selling it. I done dealt with the quote-unquote hydro, which it ain't like regular weed. It's the brownie-type stuff. You see what I'm saying? And that stuff, you don't even, man, look here. You put that, we didn't even smoke blunts with that. We put them in like a little bong or something, light a fire to it. I'm high. Mm-hmm. I'm high for 5 hours straight. I'm zooted up out my mind. But you had the different ones, like the lighter green weed, the dark weed, all of this type of stuff, but the quantity of it now is, oh, my God, it's way different than probably back when you were smoking. You ain't finna just buy a nickel bag. I don't even know nobody that sell a nickel bag of weed. If you getting any type of weed now, you better go from a dub on up, because I'm telling
What's
you, you're
losing
out. Like a 20.
Oh, okay, 20.
Yeah. And then you got the quarter, which is a little bit more extra. I mean, back when I was selling the dudes and people were still showing love, now, they'll tell you now you want a blunt or some perp. That's $50. Like, really? Seriously? I got to spend $50 just to get a blunt. Nigga, you know what I can do with But to be honest with you, I'm just saying.
Well, $50, I think you can get an ounce or something like that. Because I remember.
Yeah,
for $10, you could get at least 20 or 30 joints out of a bag.
Girl,
you know,
I should have been born back then.
And, I mean, they were nice. It wasn't no, you know, because I understand now they're putting all the seeds and stems and all this and that. You got straight up reefer, straight
up. Oh, no, honey. If you smoking with a true smoker mom dude, they going to take that them stems out of there and them seeds out of there. See, me, I ain't care. I smoked all of it because I got to get my money's worth. If I done paid you $25 for a quarter sack of weed, and I'm getting that on the love because really they'll charge you about $40 to $45 for a quarter sack, you know. And I know people like, why is they on here talking about weed like that? Because that's what the show about. But like I said, I just want to say real quick, and then y'all can get back to it. Like I said, that's one of the main reasons why I stopped smoking weed. Because I got tired of people putting perfume on the weed, trying to talk about,
yep,
oh, this, that new stuff, and I'm tasting this shit smelling like, you know, white diamond. Like, really? Seriously? You put perfume on weed. Now you trying to kill me. And I ain't got time for that. I had my little rendezvous with the powder and stuff. Let me just break this down real quick. I like the snorting. I did. Some people say I didn't like doing drugs, or oh God, I was so addicted to it. Well, I don't even say that because a lot of people did like doing them different types of drugs or whatever. But I was, you know, snorting some powder. I did it about 4 months, and it was good to me. Like my son say about a bologna sandwich, it's good to me. It was good to me, Mom Deuce, but the thing about it was I got a hold to some bad stuff. Oh, my God. And I thought I was finna die. But this is what I heard happened. I think I was pregnant. Had to be. And I didn't know it. Because I had, you know how you get a little bit, you know, they take a little straw and you put a little bit up your nose. You know, you cut that little cone in that straw and put a little bit up your nose or whatever, and you go on about your business. Hadn't even done a line, honey. Homeboy had came over. Yeah, I got some mid. That's some more weed. Another name for some old wannabe high quality type weed. So he was like, yeah, I got a blood of mid. And I was like, shoot, I got a little something, something, because I found out that he did it. And see, you got to understand, it's so many people out here that's into this drug stuff, whether it's X pills, you know, snorting powder, smoking weed. Everybody has a choice of drug, even if it's just overindulging in drinking. I've seen so many people that does that. But like I said, he came to the house. Long story short, we smoked the blunt. We did a little bit of the cocaine or whatever. I went to go lay down, and I was laying in my bed probably about 3 minutes. No lie. I jumped. It's like my body came clean up off the bed into midair, back on the doggone floor, and I was running up the hall. My heart, I ain't never in my life had my heart beat that fast, ever.
Wow.
And I'm talking about it was, I circled around in my living room, because at that time, like I said, I only had my daughter, so come to find out, I must was pregnant and didn't know it, because I was going into about my third month of pregnancy with my son, and I didn't even know that I was pregnant. I ain't pay attention to stuff like that, because I've only been pregnant twice. But I was at the top of my hallway, and I felt like my life was slipping away from my body. And I prayed like I ain't never prayed in my life. I said, God, please don't do this to me. I said, my daughter ain't in that bed, and you know I can't call the ambulance. I said, please, just don't do it to me. So I did the thing that you said do, Mom Deuce. I heard you say earlier about going to the refrigerator and getting some milk or something, you know what I'm saying, to help bring you down. Baby. I even put some in the microwave to try to warm it up. That speeded up my heart rate. I couldn't take it. It was like my heart was about to explode. So what calmed me down was I chunked down like 3 ice trays of ice. I was just eating back to back, and I just felt myself, you know, starting to calm down. But after that episode, it took me about 16 hours to start back feeling normal. Now, let me tell you what was the offset of what I started having from that powder. And like I said, I didn't even do that much. I just did it because I heard, you know, people say, well, you can lose weight, whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. Honey, after that, I started having damn panic attacks. Had to go on Praxel. I was pregnant with my son and went to the hospital about two or three times because I felt like I was having a heart attack. And considering that I was going to a private hospital, they give you the best service. They hook me up to a machine. They got this machine that'll take a picture from your heart from the inside. Mm-hmm. They ain't even got to really hook you up for real. And the doctor came back and then my family, all my family was out there. He was like, Miss Brown, your heart is healthy. He said one of the most healthiest hearts that I've seen. But I know that it hadn't been God, you see what I'm saying, that allowed me to stay him because literally I felt that I was leaving this world. Like, really. Like my soul finna say, bye-bye, bitch. Excuse me for the language, but that's how I felt. So, therefore, I would never get back into doing drugs. I don't even see, like, when people around me and they smoke weed, I don't miss it. Me and my homegirl were just talking about that the other day outside. I don't miss smoking weed no more. I don't miss that. Because sometimes you grow up and you grow away from things. And what that caller was saying about the entertainment world, baby, look here. I'm in it. I'm a promoter. I see it all the time. That's what they do. Before we can even get into cities, I was with this rapper and his entourage. Before we could get into the city, they calling up people that they know in that city looking for drugs. It's something that they always going to do. It's not a threat to them because people die and lose their life off of that, because this is their memo and their motto. And this is my last thing that I'm going to say. People in this music game, and if you look back at behind the music with Mary J. Blige, they, at that point in time, Mary was on a road downhill. They don't care as long as they can get the next fix. So if Bill or Bob over here died off of that crap, then that's their business. Because the way that they looking at it is my life. I only got one to live. I'm going to do what I please, and that's how it is.
Wow. Yep. Yep. Because, you know, people, that's how the industry is. You know, they don't care about those, the rappers and all them doing them drugs. All they're looking for is a paycheck. So if they can get you to the point where they can get you on stage, then that's what they're going to do. They're not going to come to you and say, well, you know what, we're going to put you in rehab because we don't want you going out there making a fool out of yourself. We don't want you going out there wasting people's money and people's time. What they're looking for is a paycheck. So when Whitney Houston was out there, she looked like a fool. And Amy Winehouse, that's pathetic. That is really pathetic. But then to let that girl go on stage like that.
I think I missed that. What she was? Oh, she was high when she was on stage?
Well, she was, oh my, she was past high. She didn't even know where she was at. You can, it's on YouTube.
And everything else, she didn't,
Who was that, Rhea?
Yeah, that's Rhea.
What did she say?
She was like gibberish. She was babbling like gibberish.
And her voice sounded like a man.
Yep.
I didn't even know she could sing until, because when I said, do she really sing like that? I said, but I didn't know she could sing until I pulled up that song Rehab and another song. She has a nice voice, but that, oh my. You know,
people kill me because they act like they didn't know who she was. I've been knew about Amy Winehouse, been knew about her. I mean, I didn't know she was as young as she is. Because I could have swore she was at least my age or older.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, I guess it is what it is. But I'm going to just be honest. Some of these people that go out here and get into this same crap and you fall off into drugs and stuff, I cannot say that I can be sympathetic with them because they already know. You see what I'm saying? And
right.
It's not like how it used to be back in the day, just like when we talk to kids, well, teenage girls about pregnancy and stuff. It's not like they're not seeing it. You see what I'm saying? It's not like this stuff is hidden and people ain't talking about it. This is real world. It's in your face. You look at it all the time. All they got to do is pull up Google YouTube, go to YouTube or Google Whitney Houston. She's a prime example of a dope head. And to me, and this is what I really kind of believe with certain people, and I can't say all, that like the old saying is, once a crackhead, always a crackhead, because I've been told that just because you don't smoke weed no more or you don't do cocaine or heroin, and I've never did nothing but the powder and the weed. That's it, nothing else. But I know people who have done other stuff. But I've heard that when people stop getting high, they find something else to get high off of, regardless of what that is. You might want to become like my uncle. He was a crackhead for many, many years. Now he's a pastor. So I guess he's getting high off the Lord.
Right, some of them get different addictions, because I believe when a person is constantly going in and out of their meetings, they become addicted to the fact of going to those meetings. But I could not hang going to those meetings like that. But I just believe that a lot of these people, because I know a girlfriend of mine, she's been going to meetings for eons, and she's been clean for eons. And I asked, I said, why do you still go to the meeting? She said, because I just might slip up. But see, when you have a mindset like that, then there's a possibility that you might slip up. But see, I know I'm not going to slip up. I already know it, because I'm telling myself, and I know that I'm not going to slip up. Simply, like I had mentioned before, I'm not ready to kill myself, and the drugs are nothing like they used to be when I was doing them. So it would be a waste of my time and my energy to even attempt to put any types of drugs in my body.
Yes, Lord. I got kids to live for. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I can't be out here doing stupid stuff. I watch females, you know, they get, some of them, get high and zooted up out their mind, and then their kids lacking, and they got the police breaking down their door because they dealing with a dude that's selling crack and weed and all this other stuff. You know you got kids. I'm not sympathetic with people like that, because why? And I was once one of those people that was selling dope up out of my house. Not dope, but it was weed, but I was only selling to certain people that I knew. You see what I'm saying? It wasn't like strangers was coming up to my environment. But the bottom line, you're never supposed to put your house, your family, your kids, your mate, whoever it is, you're never supposed to put anybody in jeopardy. Because let me tell you something, I done lost so many, I ain't going to say so many, let me just stop right there. I done lost some to this dope game. My first, the first dude that I would say we was real close, he got burned up by a crackhead. Crazy. And the reason they found out that the crackhead burnt him up was because the fool took some of his mail to start the fire. I mean, it's crazy. Then one of my homeboys in the dope game, dealing with some Haitians and some Jamaicans, had a partner that was riding with him and his other friend. They go to pick up the dope. Okay, the dude that was riding with them done robbed them for $60,000 in cash and the doggone dope. So basically, when them people found out that the money and the dope was gone, they told my homeboy, you got less than such and such time to get our money back. Okay, he couldn't come up with it. So guess what? They ran from where they was, came way to another doggone state, ran up in this dude's house in the middle of the night, killed him dead. This drug game is very serious, baby. Very. Yep. I done been in it.
Them
I
Haitians
know.
And Jamaicans don't play.
No, ma'am. And he ain't, they ain't never solved his murder.
Look at you.
His murder is still unsolved after probably about 18 years.
Because they don't play. Those Jamaicans and Haitians don't play. I was in a situation where some people were going into going to get some drugs, and this guy, he was going in to get some drugs as well, but he had owed somebody some money. The Jamaicans came up and killed him. Do you know people was walking over him to still go get the drugs? I said, well, that's it. I'm out of here. You know, it's just different things that happen, and it's no good that can come of it. It's really no good, because you can either end up dead or in jail, or even your family members, because they don't care. If they can't get to you, trust and believe They will get to your family members, kill a whole family's been wiped out on account of somebody owing somebody money from a drug debt. You know, so you basically have to be very, very careful who you hang with and the people that other people you know associate with, because you might not even know anything about what this person is about. You see what I'm saying? They run up in there and you get killed on a humble.
Well, I know one of the what they call the drug boy here. His philosophy is he killed those around you because a dead person can't pay him his money. So if you want to stop your loved ones from being hurt, you need to pay him his money. So instead of hurting you, he hurt those around you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have 2 minutes, 34 seconds left. Ms. Kane, you want to give out your show and let everybody know that you're going to be doing a show on my show. That's next week, right? Next Wednesday?
Yeah, ma'am.
Yeah.
Monday night. Oh, my God, we got it. We got the juice, baby, celebrity gossip. When I tell you we got the juice, Mom Deuce, we got the juice on Monday night, boo. We got the juice.
All right.
And we got a lot of stories in today's Ghetto Hood News as well. But on Wednesday, we going to be over here on Mom Deuce Show, 8 p.m., my girl Black Anonymous, she over in the chat window, and my dude, International Boogie, we going to be doing politic talk. Hood styles. We're going to be talking about Social Security, the health care form, what is this? It's National Debt, and quite a few other things. It's going to be interesting. Yeah, very interesting. Hood style.
So that'll be next Wednesday. Ms. Kane will be a host of her show on my blog talk Wednesday. And next Friday, I haven't put up the show for next Friday, but when I put it up, you can just check my page. But we have less than a minute to get out of here. Rhea, thanks, darling, for coming in and being my co-host. Thank our caller, 919, Miss Kane, people who came and stopped in the chat room for a minute, the flies on the wall. Hope everybody have a nice weekend. Be safe. Stay out the sun. See you guys next week. Good night,
good
everybody.
Night.
Thank
good
you.
Good night. Good weekend as well.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody.